Welcome back for attempt number like
three.
Oh boy. So you're watching, listening, or both, Footy for Thought. Brought to you by Eli Greenfella, joined by his co-host, the one and only,
Dima K.
Also known as DK. Just a shortened way of saying Dima K.
Yeah, that's true.
Not like Dima K is short enough already.
That's true. So, what's the topic for today,
Mr.? Oh, man. Listen, I think before we get into this topic, we are going to add the number to the suicide hotline prevention. Just out of respect, because listen, mental health is a very sensitive topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, we take it very seriously. And nowadays, it's something that a lot of people suffer from.
Suffer in silence.
And they don't speak about it. They don't open up. So we will definitely, at the end, we will add the suicide hotline numbers in the U.S. Because...
And U.K.
In the U.K., yeah. Because, you know, PEP. Well, we'll start with PEP. I mean... It's horrifying to see the state of him post-match interview. Scratches on his head. He goes out and says, I want to harm myself. He even truthfully, he seemed a tad bit manic. He just, you know, with that smile and just didn't seem super duper out of it. You know, listen. It's tough doing what he does season in, season out. Everybody goes through slumps. 6-game losing streak. That's never happened for Pep. We thought that before the international break, whatever, maybe they needed some rest. They would come back. He would get back on form. Back on form they did not get. He lost his mind. I think he needs a break. I think that the standards that he created for himself, you can't achieve that 9 seasons in a row. And good for him. Kudos for him for being on that upward slope. But now it's time to deal with what happens with the consequences. They haven't lost. Or actually, this is something I read, that going into their next match, they're actually the underdogs, which they haven't been for...
Since 2017.
2017 against Chelsea.
That's crazy.
That is insane.
That's against Antonio Conte? 2017, it would have to be.
I believe so.
It would have to be. That's probably when Chelsea won the league in Pep's first season.
So what do you think?
I mean, it's a lot to go through. I think that the issue ultimately stems that Pep has never been at a club for this long before. Even, I mean, if you consider his tenure at Barcelona B and even Barcelona's main team, I still don't think it was this long. I think that he was right in his post-match interview after Spurs, that he said that basically no team can be this successful for this long. And I think he's right. I think that he's had injuries to players which have been more impactful than they have in seasons past, because the overall depth of the squad has kind of dropped off recently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, due to poor recruitment in certain areas.
I mean, they lost Omar Barada.
Yeah, I mean, Omar Barada, but you can't really feel that immediately. Like, it's not like Omar Barada leaves and then you
but go on a six-game winless streak. They felt it during the summer. I mean, they brought in Savio. Who else did they bring in? Did Dalapa leave this summer?
This summer, yeah, he left.
So they got.
But he wasn't there last season. You know, those are just, you know, kind of fringe players for them. But I'm saying that realistically, going forward, the bigger issue was losing Chiqui Begueristán, right?
Mm.
But they got a good replacement. They got Sporting's, I think, Hugo Viana, which is a pretty good replacement for him.
Chiqui was from his Barca days, from right? The Barca. They also worked together. Yeah.
Chiqui was from the Barca days, and he was basically instrumental in getting Pep to come to City in the first place. And, you know, his loss is obviously pretty big, but, you know, you can't really describe City's downturn in form due to those types of executive staff leaving the club. I think it's more so kind of a perfect storm of injuries, poor recruitment in certain areas, aging out of players, aging out kind of extending into players going into poor form, and kind of from there. I think that if we look at City as a whole, I think maybe if Rodri doesn't get injured, you know, KDB still in form, they're probably just as good as they are last season. But you can also blame that on recruitment, because at the end of the day, Rodri, I think, played 50-plus games in the past four seasons, and they never got a replacement for him.
Right, this was inevitable.
Yeah, it was inevitable, and then there
was either it was either going to be a drop-off of form from individual players, or it was going to be injury.
Exactly.
They never really suffered too bad of an injury crisis. I mean, KDB last season missed 3 months, I believe. 4 months, maybe.
No, but I think...
He missed some time.
He missed the beginning of the season. I remember when he tore his hamstring.
They still didn't do that bad.
They didn't do that bad, but they had, you know, Phil Foden.
Phil Foden stepped up, right.
They had
Rodri,
you know, they had Haaland doing some peak performances at the beginning of the season. I think he dropped off towards the end regardless. But I think he finished with 27 goals on the season, which is still an incredible return for pretty much any striker. But for Haaland, I mean, after 36 that he had the season before, or he had more? No, 36, I think.
36?
Yeah, I think he had 36. And, you know, dropping off by that amount of goals, 9 goals, it's still pretty big. You know, that could win you 2, 3, 4 games. Right. You know,
well, he's underperforming his XG. Going into the last match week was 8.
No, I think he's had 8. And he's only scored two.
Right.
Yeah. From that period, from which he has accumulated 8 expected goals.
I feel like he is a systemic player.
Yeah, he is. He is.
And you know, if you don't have KDB dishing him,
yeah,
balls into the box, catering to his runs, 100%. To his path, he's not going to perform. You don't have anybody else. We spoke about this on the previous cast. Doku, Savinho, not enough. Grealish just came off injury. Foden's out of form.
It's just a perfect storm right now for City to start.
But I was also genuinely very, very surprised as to why Pep kind of gave up on Foden in the beginning of the season.
I don't think he gave up. I think he was just giving him time to recover from the Euros, you know?
He didn't really do much at the Euros.
Yeah, but I mean, because he didn't do it, it's like, it's a very physical season.
But he didn't play. He didn't play every game at the Euros.
He didn't, but he was there. He played in a lot of games. He was in the camp. He had a long season before that. You know, he wanted to give him some time to recover. I think it was fine. I just think Foden hasn't been able to pick up form in general. And we're kind of seeing that. But I think we should kind of, like, move on from City because we already spoke about this.
From City, I want to speak about Pep.
Let's speak about Pep and about the Liverpool fixture.
Listen, I think when you are performing at such high standards at the top, it's way easier to fall down than it is to climb back up, right? And he never really felt downfall. Kind of, he never had to look back. Sure, he had some close calls at Bayern too, but he's been growing and growing, going up and up and up since his first season with City. And with fans of City, I've seen some tweets online of people saying, wow, this is our banter era, or
they don't know what a banter era is.
Yeah, they don't. And I guess they do, but it's been so long since most of their fans
were
born in the 2010s. Apart from the Gallaghers, I got to give it to them. Those lads are diehards.
Proper Manchester.
But, yeah, I mean, the guy needs a break. Look at Klopp.
Jurgen.
And the guy said he's tired.
And he took a break.
I mean, he took a break. He did what he had to do. Pep's been coaching since, what, 06, 05, 06?
Something like that.
Something like that. It's been a long time. Nonstop.
I mean, he did take a break.
Oh, right. In New York, right? I heard.
He was coaching some U13 team.
Some U13 team, right. Yeah. He's still coaching. It's probably harder for him to coach the U13s because those youths probably don't listen.
Yeah, I have first-hand experience.
Even during the offseason, he was helping the Celtics. You know, so he's coaching on and off the pitch.
He's got to relax, you know?
Yeah, I think it would be very beneficial for him to take a break. Seeing him lose his mind publicly, you could tell that he's not all right. From a humanitarian standpoint, you know, just human to human. When you become overloaded, it's not good.
Cancel the extension, Pep. Cancel the extension.
Give Arsenal a chance.
100%. We don't even need that.
I mean, yeah, Liverpool are not really.
The Arsenal don't need that. They could take down Pep right now in his current form.
But I hope that he has a good surrounding around him. I hope that the internal organization at City recognize what he's going through. maybe have someone step up into him a little bit. Maybe have the players give him a little support. Give him some time off. I just hope he gets himself the proper help he needs, gets himself some rest. I mean, and maybe pulls a Jurgen Klopp. Maybe says, hey, you know what, I gotta step away.
Take a break, yeah.
And I gotta relax.
But I think that it's gonna be really difficult for him to relax right now because he has Liverpool away.
Right.
He has Forest at home. He has Palace away. He has Juventus away. He has United at home. He has Villa away. He has Everton at home, and then Leicester away, then West Ham at home, Brentford away, and then it gets a little bit easier. But, you know, for that pretty much period leading up to, let's say, I'll tell you right now, essentially leading up to the end of December, it's an extremely difficult fixture list for him. And, you know, at that point, after that fixture end, once they play PSG in the Champions League in match day 7, right? Then they play Chelsea at home. Then they play Club Brugge at home. Arsenal away. Newcastle at home. Liverpool at home. Spurs away. Forest away. Brighton at home. And, you know, at that point, we're realistically looking at City being like 10, 15 something points off the top by March, realistically. And
you that's think so? Like,
I mean, judging...
Yeah, that would be crazy.
It's an extremely hard fixture list. They really have almost no break. Essentially, they have from the end of December, maybe to like mid-January, kind of, in relatively easy fixtures, and then it goes extremely difficult fixtures again.
I think that the greatest New Year's gift that Pep could be gifted
is an ACL for Rodri.
Well, I mean, hopefully the science gets to that point where you can just do that. But no, I was going to say that come morning of January 1st, Pep, hungover or not, better get a blank checkbook from the directors, from the board, and say, hey, January transfer window's open. Do what you got to do.
Here we go.
Here we go. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some Fab tweets. Here we go. Of at least more than one for City this transfer until February 3rd.
I don't think they will.
I think they will. I think they're gonna need to do something.
I don't think
it's unacceptable. It's gonna be unacceptable for them, especially the standards that they've been trying to
cook
for themselves.
I mean, we'll see. By the end of December, they might be extremely off the. I mean, they're already 8 points off the top. If they lose to Liverpool at the weekend, they're gonna be 11 points off the top.
Right.
By the end of December, they might be potentially 15 to 20 points at the top.
And well, then I don't think 20, but yeah.
15 to 20, and then realistically at that point, they're going to be like, this season's a write-off. We might as well just, you know, kind of go into it, try to go in the Champions League as deep as possible in the cup competitions other than Carabao since they got knocked out, and go from there. But I think we should move on to Liverpool. Because
that's... You're right. I was about to say, speaking of Jurgen Klopp and him passing his team down to the one and only Arne Slot.
Arne Slot.
I mean, the guy, I can't even say nothing. I can't even call it a purple patch, to be fair with you. I can't. Look, I get one thing where they're kind of working in the Prem. You have him taking, you could have made the argument of him taking over Klopp's side, same squad, kind of, you know, maybe him and Klopp had a little bit of a meeting before, and Klopp was like, all right, these are going to be the tactics, and this is what you got to run with. And
No way.
But he's cooking in the UCL, given that Real are a little off form, they're still top of the UCL table.
Real Madrid?
No.
Oh, Liverpool.
No, Liverpool. Yeah. They beat Real. Bayern. Once again, like I said, given that Real's form is off right now.
Absolutely.
They're doing their thing. They're doing their thing, and they're doing it with confidence. You have guys like Connor Bradley, who's genuinely looking pretty decent.
I think he's perfect for that position, because I feel that in this season, Trent has been kind of used as like a sort of a regular fullback, which, you know.
And his, I read somewhere that his offensive metrics
have dropped. They have dropped
by quite a lot.
They've dropped quite a lot, but his defensive metrics have gone up. So he's pretty much playing as more of a natural fullback.
But by how much?
By quite a lot. I think he gets dribbled by way less.
Okay, sure. I mean, for Trent, that's a big deal, considering that he wasn't really the most defensive of. He had the more. I believe that he actually had one of the worst defensive metrics out of anybody in the Prem, out of all any fullback, in terms of how many times he got dribbled, but passed, and, because, you know,
his position kind of allowed Liverpool to have Trent push up farther up and have Konate kind of play as like a right center back, which covers Trent if he gets beaten, allowed him to go wide, and then, you know, have Van Dijk shift left or right depending on wherever the center back shift. But the point ultimately comes down to Trent is not really being utilized for his abilities, his best abilities, and maybe that's Arne Slot's way of shifting him out if he ends up going at the end of the season. Because realistically speaking, if you have Trent, he's a generational type of fullback in terms of passing and creating, and if you're using him as a traditional fullback, you're kind of wasting him. So you might
100%. Absolutely. I agree with you. I think that Connor Bradley has been looking great.
You'll be good.
You know, the thing is with Trent, right? If you get a new fullback, a young fullback to replace him, who has at least 80%, even let's say 70% of the same attacking ability that Trent has, creating ability, you are more than probable to find somebody who also has a better defensive ability than Trent. That's not that hard to replace.
Exactly. But with Trent, his attacking ability, it's way higher than the potential.
That's why I said, if you find at least someone who can recreate his numbers to 70%, that's already good enough.
100%. Yeah.
And I feel like if they got to go for a young fullback,
I think they could just stay with Connor Bradley.
No, right. But I'm saying, listen, you still need someone in rotation. So I feel like they got to go with a young fullback, someone who's going to be competing with Connor Bradley, trying to get the most out of him. I don't think Connor Bradley really had many full 90s.
He did kind of towards the middle part of last season when Trent got injured. He played a lot. But I think that they're going to need to address a left back with...
I think literally you stole the words out of my mouth.
But we don't know if Salah and Van Dijk are resigning. So you're going to have so many holes to plug in the summer transfer window. I don't even know if they have enough money to do all of that in one go.
I'm not going to lie to you. Listen, this is a conversation I want to have right now as well.
Yeah.
So first of all, I want to say that the falling off of Robertson has been insane.
It has been, but
and Tsimikas I wouldn't say he's anything special. I feel like that you still got to go on the market for a left back.
Yeah, no,
more so, I feel like, than they have to go on the market for a right back.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think Connor Bradley could be perfectly fine there. Maybe you have kind of like a Timber type of player where he can play right back or left back as cover. And
they can take Dalot off our hands.
Nah. Diogo Dalot.
They could take it. Yeah, absolutely. I think left side's their issue. Now, if we're gonna talk right now out of the big three, yeah. Trent, Mo, Verge.
Yeah.
Which one do you think would be the most detrimental loss for them? First question.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, which one of them do you think has the highest rate or highest chance of re-signing? I'll start. I think that the most detrimental loss for them would probably be Mo. And I think that the highest chance of re-signing would also be Mo. The guy's having a legacy season this year. He's going nuts. His game against Real today, sure, he missed the pen. Whatever. It happens, as we saw to Fraud Bappe. But, dude, he's cooking. He is opening up the back line like nothing, cutting through teams, creating, starting counterattacks. When him and Mane were playing together, he was selfish. The guy said, greed, that's a sin. I'm going to pass. He's been great. He has been outstanding. I think he realistically has maybe another season or two. I would say maybe at not 100% of the same performances as this season. But even if he continues to perform at 70 to 80% output of this season, next season, that's more than enough. What do you think?
I think that, yeah, realistically, he probably has the highest chance of re-signing. But also, we don't know. Within the Liverpool hierarchy, how likely are they to re-sign him? Because he's going to be looking for a...
Wages, right?
Not even necessarily the wages. I would say he's still looking for around a 2-3 year contract.
My bad.
Right? He's looking for a 2-3 year contract. Liverpool would realistically offer him like a 1+1, I think. At this point, in my opinion, I think that Liverpool, if somebody like Saudi gives them like 70, 80 million, they got to take him. Because as good as he is right now, we don't know how drastic that drop-off will be. And if you're Liverpool and you're already going to lose Trent this summer, potentially Van Dijk and Salah in the next summer to the summer after that, then you got to start thinking about the squad in the future. And these players, they could still remain there. I think that under the correct circumstances with a contract that's relatively short with a potential extension, they can be kept on. I think that you got to start looking towards long term, because if you look at Arsenal, when Aubameyang was carrying the team
during his whole Paris shenanigans, when he would fly off,
I mean, in general, he was carrying the team, and
right,
there was so much emphasis on him re-signing. But if you were to look at that signing long term, it was obviously detrimental, and it was better to just get rid of him when he was at the peak, because we kind of look at the peak and we're always like, well, are they going to be able to keep the peak? Are they going to be able to elevate their game even higher? And with Salah, it's
right. I did not expect him to have the numbers that he's having this season, or even the performances that he's been having. I mean, truly, I did not expect.
He's been really good. But I think that with Salah, like I said, we don't know where the drop-off is going to be. And clearly he's been wanting to extend, because he actually came out and he was like, oh, well, Liverpool haven't even offered me a contract.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he's typically a pretty quiet player. And, you know, quiet players, when they come out and say something to the media, it's obviously a statement that needs to be heard. And obviously the fans want him to re-sign, but it really depends what the vision is for Liverpool. If they want to kind of rebuild this squad to be another championship / UCL contender year in, year out, then you have to go and you have to sell these players, and you have to replace them with not necessarily equivalent level players, but you have to...
Similar archetype.
Similar archetype with high potential and let them bet in. Because, yeah, Van Dijk is going to be better than 95% of the replacements that they're out there. But, you know, Van Dijk, he gets injured or his form drops off because he gets older. He's not going to be the same player. And you're going to have to replace him regardless. So you might as well have that process starting now. I think that Liverpool still have some holes around the squad, you know, left back.
I mean, they're central defenders, they're center backs.
Yeah.
Always. It's one Van Dijk, and then the second name in the pecking order under him in center back rotation, Konate, is that's like...
Well, they start together.
Right, but I'm saying that there's a huge drop skill. Off after that. Yeah, yeah, you're right, drop off between Van Dijk and the second best defender on
I would
on
say
the
there's
squad.
A bigger drop off from Konate to like Kwanzaa. Right,
you think so? That's a big statement.
No, why? I think Konate is underrated. I think he's extremely good center back. I think he's just been injury prone as well. So,
but that's not good. You can't have that. I mean,
no, you can't.
United, look at United suffering injury prone Martinez and injury prone Euro and all these guys, and we're constantly having to play Casemiro center back and whatnot. But okay, going back to the conversation,
I think that Salah is the most likely to re-sign. But I think that if Liverpool were to actually utilize Trent in the way that he would be used in order to maximize his attacking potential, which would move away from slots, you know, double pivot in midfield, then they should focus on re-signing him, right? But I ultimately don't think that any of these players, if you're not going to use Trent to his best abilities, you might as well not re-sign him, right?
I agree. Listen, all they got to do is get a duplication machine, Joe Maldini in there,
yeah,
and just play him in all four slots,
yeah,
of the back
Arnie
line.
Arnie slots, yeah.
I think as this conversation was progressing, I actually genuinely think that out of the three, the hardest archetype wise to replicate in terms of who they would go for on the market would probably be Van Dijk.
You know what I'm saying? I could see that. Yeah, I think Trent
just that aerial. Having that aerial presence in the box, and just having that he has insane defensive awareness
and passing ability,
and I think that finding someone who could progress the ball as a defender, who could even come toe-to-toe against bigger guys like Haaland in the league and bully them.
Yep.
Remember that one video where it was Van Dijk versus Haaland and Van Dijk absolutely like dispossessed him and kept up with his run, gave him no space for nothing.
I mean, Van Dijk is a beast. And
that's a generational center back.
Yeah, yeah.
That unique archetype. Yap Stam type of guy.
I mean, the only player I can really think of that's like on that kind of level is like Saliba. They're never going to get him.
No, absolutely. That would never happen.
Exactly.
Maybe close shout, Rudiger.
Yeah. No,
similar,
but
the archetype wise, is that big bully kind of.
His passing isn't there. I think they have to focus on like a younger player that has the similar type of passing from the back and can grow into that position, even if they're not as much of an aerial threat in the beginning. You know, they're still young. They're growing up. Eventually, they're going to become that aerial threat. You can give them a few years to get up there. But as long as they have the fundamentals right, you can use them and bed them in early. So once Van Dijk, you know, retires or transfers or his contract just runs out, he can be there to take that mantle.
I just feel like out of the three, Van Dijk has the lowest chance of being signed by a top squad following Liverpool, right? So if he re-signs with Liverpool, that prolongs his career at top flight. I don't see any top six team. Well, I don't see him really going to any other top six team in the Prem. I don't see a team. Maybe Barca gives him 2 years.
But they could give Salah 2 years as well.
That's what I'm saying. And
or Madrid.
Salah. I feel. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, Madrid. Madrid do need a right winger, a left-footed right winger.
No, bro. I'm talking about Van Dijk right now.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
Because Salah would still get picked up by a top-flight club. Yeah. Whether it Barca, whether it be Real, even playing him as a rotation with Rodrigo.
Rodrigo Gosh.
He still gets called up to a top team.
100%.
Van Dijk, Italy.
Maybe Inter. He'll play until he's 40.
Yeah. Does he want to go there?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. He seems like he would fit in.
Yeah, he definitely just starts playing Brexit ball.
Nah, you'd play like you know.
Like the, yeah.
Like a...
Yeah.
Catenaccio.
We'll see.
I mean,
I don't think Trent, by the way, I don't think Trent is the proper option for Real.
I mean, it depends.
Truth be told.
If they sign Xabi Alonso as the manager and he plays him kind of as an inverted...
Yeah,
he would be incredible.
That's a good point.
He'd be incredible because he would tuck into the midfield. You know, he would do his passing, spraying all around the field. Diagonal balls left, right. You'd be excellent.
Right.
But I honestly want to see what you think, but I don't even think that Liverpool, as good as they've been, I think they ran hot this season. I think a lot of games, even though they've won, even like the Southampton
game. Yeah, the Southampton game, I was just about to say.
They weren't incredible.
They got exposed. Yeah, they got exposed.
But you see
that
there's like this paradox where it's like, yeah, these championship teams, they get results, right? Okay. But at the same time, their overall form ends up showing towards the season that those results kind of show that team wasn't truly a championship team. It was a little bit papering over the cracks, those results. So there's kind of like this paradox where people are like, this team is a championship team because they're able to get those types of wins. Then when you look at it on the flip side, they got those wins because overall, the team wasn't perfect enough to just score two or three and just control the game until the end. They kind of let the game seesaw back and forth and just kind of, you know, on one occasion, they'll be able to finish the game 4-2, 5-2, whatever. The game seesaws, they outscore their opponent. But on other occasions where you're unlucky, your striker is unlucky, your wingers are unlucky, your midfielders are unlucky, and you can't score, that game maybe ends 2-2, or maybe the other team wins.
I mean, they have a striker with the middle name Unlucky.
Yeah, it's true.
Darwizzy.
Darwin. But that's my point. I think that there's a lot of variance in Liverpool games, and while the team is running hot, similar to Arsenal at the beginning of 22-23, when the second part of the season comes around and those games start to seesaw, maybe you're not able to get that magic.
You start seeing the point lead slip up. And...
Yeah, exactly. And I feel that's kind of what I'm seeing with Liverpool. I don't necessarily think that they've played poor. They've been really good. They haven't been incredible. They've been really good, and they've been getting results. But there will come to a point where they go on a cold run. They start dropping points.
It happens to every team.
Yeah, it happens to every team, and... While Liverpool have ran hot, I think Arsenal and City have ran cold, especially City. And once that kind of flips, you're going to see, a much closer title race in the second half of the season, as far as I believe.
The thing is, though, if Liver could get through this next run of games
that they have on
a hot streak,
yeah.
Even if they get cold,
yeah, they might be too far away.
They might... me too far away, but they also, their cold might not be cold enough to be losing points.
I mean, that's
especially against smaller teams. You could be as cold as you want, maybe bar Man City right now, but you're expected to get results. You know, it's like Man United under Ten Hag, where you go as a crazy underdog against top 10 teams, but still when you face the lower table teams, you're the favorite.
Yeah.
There's just you don't lose the favoritism in field tilt coming into games, even if you're on a cold streak against the smaller squads. I mean,
that might be true, but we kind of saw that at the end of last season where Liverpool started dropping points. I mean, they lost to Palace at home.
They had an injury crisis.
Did they at the end of the season? I mean...
I think, was Van Dijk not out?
No, I think Van Dijk was there. I just think that they started dropping points because the team just kind of started running cold.
But they also had a lot of competitions that they were in. I remember FA loss.
Yeah, but they
to United then.
Yeah, but all of the teams, they're going to have the same thing this season, except this season they're playing in the Champions League. They're not playing in the Europa League anymore, right? I think that Liverpool will have the drop-off because we saw that after the Real Madrid game, we saw that Konate was kind of in pain. So we don't know how long that could be. That could feasibly be 2-3 months, and you have to play Kwanzaa there, right? And maybe Kwanzaa does a serviceable job, but clearly at the beginning of the season, Kwanzaa wasn't good enough, and he got dropped for... I think when Konate came back from injury, they basically rotated him out, and we basically haven't seen Kwanzaa there on a consistent basis.
He actually has some really decent, even you could say, good underlying stats, though. Kwanzaa,
yeah, in the DMs, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't miss. He shoots his shots for a defender.
That's
pretty ballsy.
Vinny's the epitome.
Yeah.
Vinny don't shoot. Yeah, so that's my opinion on Liverpool. Listen, they could feasibly be far away by the end of February, March, where that point lead will not be able to be surmounted. And the other teams are basically going to have to deal with that. But I don't feel what I've seen from Liverpool that this is going to be something that is going to carry out to the end of the season. And I felt the same way last season.
But have we had, I guess apart from City, I think it's even with City, I just think it's very rare to stay hot throughout all 38.
No, I know, but I'm saying that it's the reverse because you have Liverpool running hot now.
But they got a lot of their tough fixtures out of the way.
Did they?
I mean, Arsenal
away, but they still have to play City. They play City at home this weekend, but they still have to play City away at the second half of the season. They play Arsenal at Anfield, I think, in match week 35. They still have to play all those games. I mean, let's look at Liverpool's fixture list, realistically, and we will discuss.
Yeah. Let's pull it up.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Well, there goes our... yeah, I don't know what's up with this camera, why it's...
Yeah, it's the battery, ain't it? Okay, so Liverpool City, difficult fixture. Newcastle away, also difficult. Everton away in the last game at Goodison Park at the Merseyside Derby, right? Difficult game. You know, Fulham at home, relatively easy. But then Spurs away, and then Liverpool, United at Anfield. In the second, let's see their second half of the season. They have City away. They have Newcastle at home. Right, City away. Hold up. Let me just make sure that I... Yeah.
They have City away. They have Newcastle at home.
Yeah.
They have Southampton at home.
Yeah, then they have Villa.
Villa away, which is, I feel like that's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's going to be very tough.
Everton at home. Fulham away.
This is where their season might actually come undone.
I feel like I know exactly what you're about to say.
Liverpool
at home against the Spurs. Then Liverpool away against Chelsea. Liverpool at home against Arsenal.
Brighton.
And then Liverpool away versus Brighton.
Yeah, that might be. They have two home, two away. But if the league is relatively close.
Especially if Arsenal start... continue to look the way they've been looking.
Yeah.
For sure. I think this might be one of those toe-to-toe runs between Liverpool and Arsenal.
Yeah, but and... I mean, if we look at Arsenal in the same fixture, in the same part of the season, Arsenal towards the end of the season, let's see what they're playing. Arsenal.
Although defensively, though, Liverpool has been super sound.
But I think they've been overperforming. But let's see. Arsenal, towards the end of the season, yeah, they get those fixtures out of the way. But pretty much from April, it's Fulham at home. It's Everton away. It's Brentford at home. It's Ipswich away. It's Crystal Palace at home. It's Bournemouth at home. And then it's Liverpool away. Newcastle at home. Southampton at home. So realistically... in that same period of fixtures, Arsenal realistically their most difficult game is Anfield, right? And most of the other games are basically at home to either mid-table teams, lower teams, and then there's Newcastle sprinkled in there at home. So
Which I feel like they'll be okay with.
I think they'll be okay. And, you know, at the same time, Liverpool have 3-4 extremely difficult games because you don't know.
Right, especially back-to-back-to-back.
Back-to-back, 4 on the bounce.
On the bounce, 2 home, 2 away, but still. Yeah, that's and it's going to be already kind of deeper into the UCL if they end up making it. Exactly. And they have, yeah.
Exactly. So, realistically, you could see the difference between Arsenal and Liverpool because I feel that Arsenal's depth is better in almost all positions, maybe bar forwards, right? And when the fixture list gets to the point where UCL fixtures are pretty much midweek, and then you have Chelsea, Arsenal, Brighton away on the weekends, then it turns extremely difficult.
You actually got me thinking right now in terms of
the fixtures?
In terms of the squad depth of Arsenal versus Liverpool.
You got me
actually thinking. It's interesting. Yes. Forwards.
Forwards, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I would take. Not a fan of either team. So, I would take Salah over Saka for this season. Form wise, all right. Let's just put it that way. Let's say who's better form wise. I would take Mo over Saks. Striker, Darwin or Havertz. Shit. I'm in like a brain freeze right here.
I don't think we even need to look at it pound for pound. We just need to look at depth. And I think
overall depth. I mean, yeah, Liverpool definitely depth wise.
Yeah, I mean, you have one injury attackers. To Van Dijk. You have one injury to Van Dijk, or you have one injury to, I don't know, Gravenberch or Salah, and your season kind of is derailed, right? Not in the same way that, let's say,
you have an injury to Odegaard, and your season is derailed.
I mean, it might have been derailed, but if we look at the fixture list, it was extremely difficult in that exact period. Okay. So even with Odegaard being out, it was coinciding with the most difficult part of the season. So maybe he was there, maybe he wasn't there. We don't know. Realistically, yes, his impact is immense, and he's come back from injury, and hopefully he stays injury-free until the end of the season. But I think, ultimately, Liverpool still haven't gone through their injury crisis. Yeah, you know Liverpool fans are going to come out and say, yeah, we lost Alisson, but I think the drop-off between the players that they have lost to the next player hasn't been that big in those exact positions. So losing Alisson Kelleher...
Although he might be, you just reminded me, he might be the most on-form goalie in the
100%,
world. Right 100%. He's actually... Listen, if that's a purple patch,
yeah,
then that purple patch... It's huge.
No, I agree.
He's
always been good,
on
though.
Fire. Yeah, he has. He has, actually.
He's always performed when he's been called upon. But I think that's what separates Liverpool right now in terms of their injuries, is that the injuries that they've gotten have had good players to replace them. Like, if they were to lose Van Dijk, the drop-off would be immense. The drop-off between Alisson to Kelleher is not immense. It's actually...
On paper?
On paper, yeah.
I think it is.
No way.
Any time you're going from your starter who's won the league for you, who's shutout star, you know, for national, who's probably, arguably, top 3 best Prem goalies of all time.
I mean, that's true, but...
And then, you know, you take any team in the Prem and you compare their starting goalie to the ability of their backup goalie,
no.
Bar maybe Arsenal last season when you had Raya and Ramsdale. I mean, the difference in skill and level is huge. And who would have thought that Keller would be able to put up such phenomenal numbers?
I mean, I think a lot of people could have foreseen this because he has come in quite frequently in the past few seasons, especially when Alisson's gotten injured and performed extremely well. I think that the drop-off there is really not that immense. I think it's actually quite close. I think that if we were to actually look at it...
So you're saying that he's a starter
yeah,
on even a, and even a top six team.
If he was like Chelsea's goalkeeper, he'd be a starter.
Right, I actually saw links.
That would be, yeah, it would be a good signing. But I'm saying he would start for a lot of big six clubs. I think that he's a way better shot stopper than Ederson is. He's a better shot stopper than...
Ederson's just distribution is really
good. Yeah, exactly, which is the trade-off that you make. But I think that my point ultimately is that the injury that Liverpool have had has been in positions where the drop-off hasn't been big. So once they start getting injuries, if they do, in positions where the drop-off is extremely big, then we're going to see a drop-off that we haven't seen yet to this point in the season. That's my point.
No, that's a good point. I could see that. I mean, no team really has perfect depth.
No team.
Maybe
no.
Chelsea, but they're it's not like their starters are like insane, in the first place.
Exactly.
So it's their depth. It's kind of switching out garbage for garbage.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, garbage for trash. Exactly. Interchangeable words.
Exactly.
In and out.
Exactly. I agree.
So, yeah, but that's how any big team is built. And this is actually what the statement that I'm going to transition to our final discussion point
in Real Madrid
is, you know, I think a team is more successful when it's built around no more than 2 to 3 superstars. Yeah. And the rest of the players are catering to those stars rather than built on all these Galacticos that can't play well together. Point. Van Dijk, Trent, Salah. I wouldn't say Alisson's a superstar.
Maybe.
But, I mean, a goalie superstar, that's different. That doesn't affect the rest of the game, to be fair. You know, it's not like a goalie could be selfish.
But he can also prevent, you know, goals from going into the net.
But look.
Games, yeah.
Right. But I'm saying in terms of, you know, ego and just superstar level kind of like, firepower.
Like
on
gravitational
pull. Yeah, like Van Dijk, Salah, Trent. Three superstars.
Yeah.
The rest of the team are good players who have been catered
to their needs.
To fit the needs of the superstars of the team, right?
Yeah.
Arsenal, Saliba, Saka, Odegaard, superstars.
Yeah.
Rest of the team, I don't think he's a superstar. He's definitely very quality.
No.
Raya, very quality.
Timber,
quality. Not a superstar. Not a superstar. Not yet.
Not yet.
We'll see.
He's getting there.
Rice, quality. Not a superstar.
He could be. If he was playing at six.
Maybe.
If he was playing at six.
I don't know. Maybe. But Saka, Odegaard, Saliba. Three superstars. Do not interfere with each other. The rest of the squad caters to them. Right? Case in point. Fair. City. Rodri. Haaland. No one on defense is a superstar.
Guardiola.
Not a superstar, Josko. In my books.
He's
not a superstar.
He's getting there.
I get your point
that there's like a core and then everybody else is
and then you have your 2 to 3 main guys who are every single week in, week out, if they're healthy players, you do not change them out of the lineup.
I agree.
You have Real.
Yeah. I mean, that's
five,
a perfect transition.
Six, even seven superstars, two of which fight for the same position.
Three, technically.
You have one guy who arguably the best left wing based on performances in the world. Vinny. You have another guy who's arguably the best left wing on paper as of right now in the world. You have nobody at the number 9.
Bobby.
You have what I call Rodrigo a superstar.
No, I wouldn't. Borderline. Maybe if he was a left winger, maybe I could see it.
Borderline. But okay. You have Bellingham, who is probably the only non-crybaby type of guy who actually knows his abilities and can admit that he doesn't work where he's playing. Also a superstar, comes out and says, I'm not fucking with what's going on right now. Yeah, sorry. Explicit. We'll put it on check. You know, he's not up with that riffraff. You have Fede Valverde, sir, superstar,
blue collar.
Doesn't have anybody really competing with him in that position. Fine. I mean, Courtois,
Tchouaméni,
I wouldn't say he's a superstar.
No, but I don't think if you don't say that he's not a superstar, then I can't say that Fede Valverde is a superstar.
I think he is.
No, I don't think so. I think that they're on similar levels.
Hey, that's okay, that's a little disrespectful.
No, come on. Fede Valverde?
Whatever it is, you just have, and Real's suffered with this. History, this is a fine example of history repeats itself. Galacticos, come on, man.
Yeah.
You see it. Last year, you had Joselu, another one of those farmer-esque, Vardy type of guys. No name in comparison to the other nines in the world. Comes on, does his job.
Newcastle reject.
Gets his round of applause. Sits the next 60 for the next game. Comes on in the last 30. Bags again.
That's the type of player they need.
Good luck, Charlie type of guy.
Yeah.
You let him go. He comes on, secures late winners for you. Comes on, does his thing. UCL against Bayern. Big games. Works for you in the league. Let him go. And you fall off. Boom. What do you expect? You need to have your one Vinny in attack. Boom. Superstar. Rodrigo. Great player. Joselu.
But they were never going to start Joselu. They're never going to start Joselu as the main striker every single time. He was kind of more of like a backup rotational player.
Okay, whatever it is, fine. You don't start him. You pick up somebody who, I don't know, somebody who's even a proper nine.
Bobby.
I was a fan of his coming into the season, this Copa run, whatever it is. I don't know. I think out of their bench players, I think Arda, I'm a fan more of him, and I think he has the highest potential in terms of,
you know, who would be a crazy player there? Kai Havertz.
I was literally thinking that we're gonna get cooked.
Are we gonna get cooked? Because they were, he was,
I was thinking to, that's a
he was linked to them.
That's a decent archetype.
That's exactly the archetype
for
that they need. They needed like that hold up player that could link up the play, right, but is also technically gifted in the sense where even if they're not getting the ball,
dude,
they could do something.
Dude, right? I think Harry Kane,
wow,
would have been and still would be much more of a beneficial signing for them than Mbappe.
100%. A million percent.
A million percent.
Trillion percent.
Whatever the next zero after a trillion is. That's it. They let him go to Bayern.
I mean, it was very expensive, and
It doesn't matter. If you're already so star-driven and you want big names, like Don Perez, who, don't get me wrong, I'm not taking nothing away from him. I mean, that's probably the greatest GM of all sports history.
100%.
In like 20th and 21st century, bar maybe the Bulls GM, you know, who put together that team. But this guy pulls Figo, whatever. Our listeners probably know his background.
Yeah, he's the Don.
Yeah, the Don, exactly. But point is, he has to stop being so capricious.
I mean,
he has to stop going on his whims. You had a UCL winning squad. Upgrade maybe the positions that need upgrading. Relieve Jude from his unnatural position into his natural position. Get someone to replace him. You have Dani Carvajal.
Tore his ACL,
and they had no one there. No one. Why go for Mbappe? This guy's been struggling at PSG. Sure, whatever. Put up his goals. Also, not been as consistent.
I agree.
I don't know. It just doesn't work. It does not work. Look at Bayern. Sorry, not Bayern. Look at Barca.
That's a little bit different, though.
Why? Let's talk about that superstar structure. Lamine Yamal, superstar.
I mean, he's a superstar in a position that they needed, you know what I mean?
That's about it.
Yeah, but it's like...
That's one superstar like, you're building, you have Dani Olmo. I mean, you have Rafinha.
Look, I'm going to be honest with Real Madrid. I think that, yes, there are issues. Like, they didn't really need to sign Mbappe. They should have definitely won for somebody who was a striker or left back. I'm sure that there were more, or even right back, realistically speaking. There were a lot of positions that they could have had cover for. I think that Perez evolved to the point where his Galacticos aren't the Galacticos of the past in the sense that they don't cost monumental fees. That's why he probably didn't go for Harry Kane. I want to preface that by saying, yes, he's still focused on these star players, especially in forward position, because realistically, Mbappe, he's really signed because he is on paper the best player
that's
in the world.
That's right, that's what I said.
Yeah.
And because he could probably push the most kit sales.
I mean, yeah, true. But listen, at the end of the day, like, even if Mbappe joins, you can sell Vinny for like 100, 150.
I mean,
sell Rodrigo.
You gotta,
you know.
Okay, you sell Rodrigo, and then what? You play Mbappe on the right like when he played for Monaco?
No. You get someone, you get a right winger.
Why? Why? If I'm going to be completely honest here, I would not sell Vinny.
Really?
I would definitely. Okay, Vinny didn't play today.
He didn't.
He didn't play today. What happened?
They lost.
Did Mbappe look any more powerful or any more dangerous out on that pitch now that he had that whole left flank to himself?
But are we sure that
was he able to prove a point today and say, "Okay, look. This guy, this Brazilian's in my way. Get him out of here. I'm going to take over. This is going to be my club." No.
He didn't. But are we sure that Vinny would have done the same thing?
He's been doing it.
I mean, he has been. I agree. But
he's been doing it. He's in Ballon d'Or shouts. Possibly even, we could say, robbed.
Really?
But he's been doing it.
I agree. But I think, are we also going to consider the injuries?
To
Alaba, ACL, Militao, ACL.
Okay.
Carvajal,
hold up. Fine. But right now, we're not talking about Real. We're talking about specifically Mbappe.
No, I know, I understand, but Mbappe...
I get it. I get what you're saying. Where it kind of affects the whole structure of the
100%.
Team. 100%. And maybe their attacking sequences aren't as fluid because they have guys playing out of their natural positions and their build-up play now is a little different. I understand. You can't take risks with your wingbacks going up because you don't have your main defensive core.
Yeah,
fine.
100%.
I get what you're saying. But you take big-time guys. You take Cristiano. You take Messi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bro, they don't. They ball out. They ball out. It doesn't matter to them who's out, who's not out. Those are the guys that say, okay, we have a little bit of, you know, patches in our, you know, leaks in our squad. I'm gonna put it on my back. You never saw Ronaldo or Messi in their primes, in their respective positions, make an argument occur. Are they the right guys to be starting?
100%, but
never, ever, ever. And for a player of Mbappe's stature, or at least on paper, I'm gonna keep saying on paper.
On paper, yeah.
Right? There shouldn't be debates of would Vinny have been a better player in that position today than Mbappe. That should not happen.
That shouldn't. But I think the gap between Vinny and Mbappe isn't.
It isn't.
Yeah.
And that goes back to our ultimate point. He was a useless signing. He just exactly at that phase. Exactly. He was a useless signing. They got him for free. Sure, he'll generate some kit sales for them. Sure, I mean, international fans who know the name Kylian Mbappe because it's Kylian Mbappe, not because of his Monaco days or whatever it is.
PSG days.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I mean...
Fine, it attracts an audience. But...
It's a show.
Even his Euro campaign was weak. And... I've seen him play live in two games during the Euros against Portugal and against Spain. Sure, he had the assist in the game against España, where he played that ball from the left into the box for the header. But I mean, the guy didn't have an all-time Euro.
Yeah, but I mean,
his World Cup, I get it.
That was gonna be my next point.
World Cup, sure, but we're talking about recent form. This is kind of a point, right? Where it's like, did he get worse with age? Was his prime at like from like 21 to like how old is he? 25 now?
Something like that.
21 to 24.
Yeah, I mean, are we maybe prematurely judging him at his time for Real?
Yes. Okay, that's fair. That's definitely fair.
He could have evolved into one of the greatest left wingers. I mean, he already is.
But now
one of the
we go back
time.
To a, again. We could bounce back between these two points. You give him time, but did they really need him?
No, they didn't.
Will it allow him to adapt into that role and to actually get comfortable enough?
Maybe not, but maybe sell Vinny, get it, like put all the money into a striker.
Now that goes back to the other point. If they do that,
Holland.
What if? No. Forget that. Sure, they sell Vinny. What if he doesn't get back? What if his prime passed?
I
think that's a paradox. I think it's just a nonstop back and forth loophole type of question that we can't answer right now. That my ultimate verdict is, I don't want to say he's washed. He's definitely not washed. That would be like one of those like stupidly dumb takes that you see on Twitter, that you know those idiots post for clickbait.
Hater central.
Yeah. Well, just that stupid shit that gets people to delete their apps.
100%.
I don't think he was the right. I would keep Vinny on the squad, and I'll explain to you why. Real quick, I'm going to make one point, right?
Yeah.
When Vinny came to Real, they believed in him. He wasn't scoring goals. He was messing up. He was missing sitters. People were pointing the finger at him and saying, okay, this was just another one of those Brazilian flops. Big name. We'll never amount to it. Two seasons after, he started picking up.
So maybe that's what
he started picking up. Hold up. But Vinny kind of came as like this youth.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he was molded into what he is through mentorship. He was molded into that position. Mbappe's not at an age where he needs to be molded. Mbappe has his own game, has his own style, has a CV that says, okay, you're a made man. You're the man on paper. You're the man on paper. So it's not like, you know, young Vinny, you see he could shine, and then you mold him and he earned his spot. Mbappe shouldn't have to earn his spot.
He shouldn't.
Mbappe is given the spot.
That's true.
You need to earn that spot to take away from Mbappe. And I don't think you sell Vinny. I don't think you sell the guy that literally was molded into Real heritage from the time he arrived to today's day, where he is runner-up for Ballon d'Or. As some may argue, he deserved to win it. You don't. You just don't, man.
Vinny to Manchester. You heard it here first.
I'll take it any day of the week.
Not United.
I will look.
Nah, to City.
Screw you.
Imagine him at City.
Imagine him at United.
I mean, why would he want to go there?
They would literally, you know, there's a statue of Dennis Law, yeah. Bobby Charlton, and George Best.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even play a game. I would personally fly out there and start the construction of his face next to those three. I would do it.
I mean, he would have water falling on his head during the rain, bro.
It's okay. It's all right,
from
man.
The roof.
It's all right.
From the leaky roof.
It's okay, man.
Okay.
It's fine. So, overall, I think we had a...
Mbappe on fraud alert.
Pep.
On fraud alert.
On fraud alert. And yeah, before we end this pod, I did want to provide the... suicide hotline number. If you are suffering, or you know anyone that is suffering, anyone that is going through a hard time and they may not want to speak about it, please reach out. Please do the due diligence. Take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. Always check in. Pep, we wish you all the best. You know, I hope that it gets better for you. 988, suicide and crisis lifeline in America. All you have to do is dial 988 or text 988. There's an official website, 988lifeline.org. For the UK, let's see. For the UK, is it the same? No, it's nhs.uk. Please reach out. Don't sit there. Don't think that you're alone in this. You're not. Like I said, I hope for, you know, I wish the best for Pep, and I hope it gets better for him.
I hope so as well.
So
I think that you gotta get to a point where the success that you achieve isn't at the detriment of others, but rather at the success of yourself.
And we've all been there. We've all been through it. You know, I'm very happy and grateful that I have DK, who I always is able to talk to, and I hope he feels that he has me. I'm here for him, and that's it. You just gotta cherish it. You gotta watch out for yourself, and sometimes you gotta step away. So
100%. That was Footy for Thought.
Take care, and
God bless.
Peace.